Hi everyone, Ryan here, and welcome to episode 15 of The Stoic Advantage. Today I'm going to play an interview that I had with Jonas Salzgeber on another podcast that I do. This is a podcast called Philosophy in Motion. We talk about self-development and philosophy in general. So a few months ago, myself and Igor, who is the co-host, interviewed this gentleman named Jonas Salzgeber. And Jonas wrote a book called The Little Book of Stoicism. I highly recommend the book. It's super accessible in terms of its language. And I'll be honest with you, if someone asked me, hey, Ryan, what's a book you recommend to just get into Stoicism? This would be probably my number one choice. In the interview, he talks about his writing process, talks about how Stoicism has really helped shape his worldview, and also gives some really interesting book recommendations to check out. I know one that I looked out after the podcast was The Oxygen Advantage. Really great book. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Please remember to download the podcast, whatever platform you're using. Follow the podcast, tell your friends, that would be great. And here's my interview with Jonas Salzgeber. So Jonas is the author of The Little Book of Stoicism, which I have my copy here. Igor
we are supporting.
and the subtitle is Timeless Wisdom to Gain Resilience, Confidence, and Calmness. And according to Jonas on his website, he also writes for a small army of remarkable people at njlifehacks.com. So Jonas, welcome to Project Uproar.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be on your show.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah, we really like your book. We've been for about a year or so heavily reading Stoicism stuff, and I think your book does an awesome job of distilling some of the main concepts, some of the best examples. Like, one of my personal favorites is the Hercules. What would a Hercules been without his struggles? His challenges made him great. That kind of stuff, like, that changes your life if you think about life like that.
Yeah, so the first question I had for Jonas, which is a question that I was interested in, because right at the beginning of your book, you talk about when you graduated university, I believe you went on a trip, and you said, university got me to write these papers, do these readings, but we never talked about what it meant to live like a meaningful life, or what it means to live the good life. So I presume that kind of relates maybe to why you investigated into Stoicism. But my first question I have is, how did you actually get into Stoic philosophy?
Well, yeah, I don't really have a fascinating story there, because Stoicism has become very trendy in recent years. So I just, you know, I think it was Ryan Holiday's The Obstacle is the Way, which is based on this idea that what stands in the way becomes the way, you know, by Marcus Aurelius. And it's, you know, what you said about the Hercules story, that, you know, these, or what's in your way, these challenges are, you know, there for you. They are necessary for you to grow. And so I think it was The Obstacle is the Way that introduced me to Stoicism, or this idea from Marcus Aurelius, who was probably the most famous Stoic. And, you know, I read the book and I really enjoyed the book. But, I mean, I didn't really learn much about, you know, Stoic philosophy. So, yeah, but I was intrigued. I knew they must have some great ideas. So, yeah, it introduced me to Stoicism, but then I dove deeper with the more specific books on Stoic philosophy.
Awesome. Yeah, and obviously for anyone out there wanting to learn about Stoicism, we highly recommend The Little Book of Stoicism. It's a great way to begin your study into it. And yeah, the first part is little, right? It's like less than 100 pages. Then the practices makes it a bit of a bigger book, but still overall pretty little, right?
First, I wanted to have it, you know, smaller or shorter, and it turned out to be not so little anymore. But I think, yeah, it's the idea is still small, you know, The Little Book of Stoicism, to give you, you know, the most important bits and pieces, and so you get a simple overview. So
exactly,
the idea stays the same, but you're right, the book isn't so little anymore.
Yeah, but it's okay, especially if you look at like Stoicism as like a whole. It's very little, right? Because there's so much to talk about in so many works.
Yeah,
so
it
does a great job of filtering through that. And
thanks.
No problem. And we wanted to ask you, this is like a common question Stoics ask each other, I feel like. And it's like, what's your favorite Stoic and why? Who's your favorite Stoic and why?
I get this question asked quite a lot. And I don't really have a favorite Stoic, you know. I like at least the four Roman Stoics. I like all of them for their, you know, unique excellence. So with Seneca, I love his writing.
Yes.
And his humanness. He's very, he's, you know, with all his flaws, he's very human. You can see he's far from perfect. Mm-hmm. That's what I like about Seneca. Then Musonius Rufus, he's a very practical guy. And he had great perseverance. I think he was maybe the Stoic who was, you know, furthest in his development. I think he was most, you know, really a real Stoic. And you can see, or what we know about him, that he really practiced those ideas. And then with Epictetus, what I love about this guy is that he's such a good teacher, you know, very understandable. He's working with metaphors, and he's a very simple guy. And then last but not least, Marcus Aurelius. I really like him for his humility and his prudence he had as an emperor. So he was a very powerful man, but he, you know, tried everything to, you know, stay humble at all times. So I think if they were still alive today, I'd like to have, you know, Epictetus as a teacher.
Yeah.
But since they did, I think my favorite might be Seneca because of his writings. He's brilliant, or he was a brilliant writer. And it's, you know, yeah, I just feel so, you know, joyful when I read his text. He was a great writer.
Awesome. Yeah.
I love all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. He entertains while he writes too. It's like a very nice experience. And yeah it's interesting. It depends also like where you are in life with which one you want to kind of adopt more at that point. Because let's say you're trying to build a business. You are trying to raise income even while trying to be unattached from it, right? It makes more sense to look at Seneca. Well, but if you're in tough times, then it makes you feel better if Epictetus says, poverty is a shortcut to virtue, right? Yeah. So it all depends on where you're at, and then use the Stoic that, you know, would best let you enjoy the situation you're in, even if it's a difficult one.
Yeah.
So Jonas, on the topic of kind of reading and writing, I'm curious to know, what was the process like writing your book? I believe your book was self-published, right? So probably a lot of work on your end had to go and on your part. So what was the process like writing your first book?
Yeah, it was a massive challenge. It's, you know, at the time, what was most helpful was Stoicism and Stephen Pressfield's...
The War of Art.
The War of Art, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Because when you're in the process, you know, oh man, it's not so easy to sit down and write. And then you try to prepare your best for the next morning so you will be able to write and get the, you know, move on with the book. And so you would prepare and get up, motivated, do your morning routine, do some movement, get in the sunshine. And then you sit down and suddenly you have this inner resistance holding you back for no obvious reason. And I mean, it was a humbling process and a long process, I'd say. And we were really, you know, fortunate because my brother and I, we moved to Sharm el Sheikh in Egypt. And we lived there for 7 months, and that's where I wrote the book.
Wow.
And there you have no friends and not much to do. So I just couldn't do anything else than work on the book, which was really helpful, actually.
Wow, perfect.
And I mean, you mentioned it, then we self-published a book. And it's funny, you know, when you wrote the book, you think the biggest part is done, but then it's again, I would say the same amount of work almost, you know, to publish the book and prepare a good launch and everything. So, yeah, you know, I'm glad it all went well and the book is selling so well and people appreciate the book, like you guys reading the book and, you know, finding value in the book. I'm really glad, you know, it's been working out very well. But it was a humbling experience to write and publish the book.
I guess kind of a follow-up is, why did you decide to approach the book in the way you did? Like, did you see something like a hole in the possible Stoic market that wasn't being addressed? You said you read Ryan Holiday's Obstacle is the Way, but he wasn't really talking about Stoicism. He was just illustrating one principle. Like, did you see something missing in the literature of Stoicism that you wanted to fill, or why did you approach it the way that you did?
Yeah, I thought the book is missing because I read 10 or more books on the subject, and, you know, the original texts from, you know, Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius, they're not like textbooks. So it's still hard to understand all those fantastic ideas. And the biggest challenge was, you know, to get an overview of this philosophy. And even with modern books, I mean, The Daily Stoic, I think it's a great book, but I recently wrote an email that says it was a bit the love-hate relationship with The Daily Stoic book, because I love those ideas. But when you want to learn about Stoic philosophy, when you want to get an overview, it was a bit frustrating because, there's so many great ideas. Mm-hmm. But, you know, over a whole year, basically, I think maybe the book has 1,000 quotes, which are all great, but doesn't really give you an overview. And also, I mean, Donald Robertson's Stoicism and the Art of Happiness, which I find really great, and it helped me a lot. And also William Irvine's Stoic Art of A Guide to the Good Life by Will Irvine, which is a great book. But still, I found that a very simple, practical book about what Stoicism is all about was missing. And that was actually the reason why I started even writing about Stoicism, you know, in articles, because I was looking for a simple answer, you know, what's Stoicism? And I would Google it and read all those books, and I always struggled, you know, to explain it to friends. I was reading Stoicism for a long time and thought, oh man, Stoicism is so cool. And I would tell friends about Stoicism and they'd simply ask, oh, what's it all about? I was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, they have so many great ideas. It's, you know, you focus on what you control, and, you know, it's hard to explain, but it's really cool. And I knew a lot of things about Stoic philosophy, but I didn't really grasp, you know, the whole idea. So I really thought this book is lacking, and I'm not sure, you know, I could actually fill the space. I tried my best, but I thought something is lacking that brings Stoicism, you know, to the very simple people like you and me, you know, who need some simple explanations to understand it. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, no, it was really good. And I like that idea of you putting that triangle together, right? So eudaimonia in the middle. One side is taking responsibility, one side is focused on what you can control, and the other side is, I don't know exactly how to say it, but erete or virtue, right?
Yeah.
And so how did you come up with, like, that concept? Was that also just you trying to simplify things, making them easier to remember for your friends?
Yeah, for myself, actually.
Yeah, for yourself.
It's hard to explain how you got, like, came up to this idea. I was working there in Egypt for a long time, and, you know,
Egypt,
all those Stoic ideas, and I wanted to make it compact and easy to understand. And so I had the most important things, and somehow it came to me. It's hard to explain. I just tried to simplify it for myself and for the book. And yeah, it's hard to explain, really. It's I don't know who to give credit to for this idea. I think many writers speak about the muse or something. You know, it's just like you show up basically and something is helping you writing, and maybe that's what happened with me. I don't know. But yeah, the idea is to simplify Stoic philosophy, or to get a simple visual, you know, image to explain this philosophy. So yeah.
Yeah.
So really quick, if you could explain the philosophy in a brief kind of definition or summary, how would you define Stoicism for those who maybe are new to the philosophy?
But yeah, I would, you know, kind of stick to this Stoic happiness triangle and say the goal of life for the Stoics was the good life, basically. The life we all want, you know, to live a flourishing life. And then how do you get there? You try to express your best self in every moment. Try to be your best whenever possible. A strategy to get there is to focus on the things you control. Focus on your actions and accept what you don't control. And that means in Stoicism, what happens to you is not so important, but what matters is how you respond to it. And that's where your response ability is coming from, or is coming in. You are responsible for those challenges in life. I mean, you are in life with the problems. Many people call it problems, but these are challenges, and you're responsible to find your best response to it. So the goal is the good life. You try to express your best self in every moment. You focus on the things you control, and you take responsibility for the challenges you're facing in life.
Yeah, and I really like that quote where it's like, it's not what you bear, but how you bear it. And I think that's kind of what it is. You know, like everyone has their own challenges in life, but every difficulty is an opportunity to practice these virtues. And if we look at it like that, then really nothing is good or bad, right? Except the way we respond to it. So I love that. We talked about some books, and The War of Art, I'm glad you mentioned it, because like that was huge for me too. Ryan actually got it for me last year for New Year's. And like that was perfect timing, because I was starting to write every day.
And you know what's interesting? Just the way the universe works, I gave you the book. I also gave the book to, I'm a teacher during the day. I gave the book to a fellow teacher who wanted to start writing. So I lost my copy. And doesn't one of my good friends for my birthday send me a copy in the mail the very next day? So like, I can't get away from this book.
It's like you all need it desperately. No, so I strongly recommend anyone who wants to do anything, not even writing like necessarily, but definitely for writing, entrepreneurship. This book gives you a nice kick in the butt to get you doing stuff. But I wanted to ask, is there other books that had like huge impacts on your life? You mentioned some Stoic ones, but any other ones you want to mention?
I mean, now when we're talking about The War of Art, I read Marie Forleo's Everything is Figureoutable at the end of last year. And I told my brother Niels, hey, I think this is the new War of Art, because it's really helping in the creative process. So that's one book.
Perfect.
Yeah, one recent book I could highly recommend, Marie Forleo's Everything is Figureoutable. Very Stoic idea as well, you know, that again, you have these challenges, but you will figure it out, right? Just, you know, persevere and don't give up. Try to find a solution to this challenge. But I mean, for me, probably the most important book in my life has been Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now.
Okay, because perfect.
It opened to me to this world of mindfulness or awareness. And I think that's the most important skill, at least in my life, you know, to be more aware, to be more here in the present moment. Because even if you want to practice Stoic philosophy, you need some awareness, you know, to get started. Because Stoicism asks you, you know, to be your best self in the moment. And if you're unaware, yeah, well, how do you want to do that? You're right. If you're half sleeping, you can't be your best self because you will just do what you do automatically. So you will, this all requires awareness. So that's one book. And A Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I couldn't recommend this book highly enough because I really think everybody should read this book. It's the must read of our time because this horror, you know, is only like 60 years ago or 70 years ago. And it's so close still. And you see what's possible or what humans are possible, you know, or what we can do, you know. On one side, you have Viktor Frankl, who was a prisoner. On the other side, you have the German Nazis. But both were people, right? And it's not a big difference. And it's just so interesting what's going on in our psychology. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, we mentioned this idea before, Viktor Frankl's idea, it's where he found the meaning of life, that the challenge you have is your way. It's, Marcus Aurelius, again, you know, what stands in the way becomes the way. It's all found in Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. So, yeah, this book is, if you haven't read it, I think everybody should read this book. It's phenomenal. And it's, yeah, these experiences he's sharing with the reader are just mind-blowing, you know, like, oh, shit. It makes you grateful for the life we're having and makes you think and gives you meaning. I think it gives you meaning in life and maybe, you know, a new way to see things, you know, with this idea to, you know, you are responsible or you are asked by life to respond to its challenges. It's putting something in front of you. You master this challenge. There's, again, something new. Really important book, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that one too. And I think an important part of that is that, yeah, it's a relatively recent example of someone really putting a lot of these Stoic practices into action and getting through like one of the most horrific experiences ever. So yeah, it, like a lot of this stuff is useful, but sometimes when you have people writing it 2,000 years removed from you, you're like, yeah, you know, how much can we trust this? This is so long ago. But yeah, Viktor Frankl, for anyone who's interested, it's a great, almost modern example of these practices in action.
For sure. And speaking of those practices, you had 55 practices in your book. I'm curious, what are your favorite practices or what are the practices you go to the most on a daily basis to help you attain that kind of flourishing, virtuous life?
Yeah. I'm still far off, by the way.
This is the sage right here.
One thing I do every day is personal reflection. I think that's one thing that's so important in Stoicism. I mean, we have Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, which was nothing else than daily reflection to himself. And for me, that's really important to sit down, take 10, 15 minutes every night, really to reflect on my actions and thoughts and what I've done that day and, you know, where I can improve, what I want to do better, but also what I've done well this day. I think that's, for me, the most important practice. And then I often go to the practice of the view from above. So, you just zoom out. And I think this is a brilliant practice. And I use this practice when I'm kind of, you know, lost in the problem and I can't find the solution and because maybe I'm too close. And then I try to zoom out and look at myself and my challenge from above, you know, take the bird's eye view or even, you know, astronaut's view from the moon or I don't know. And this perspective, it's so incredibly useful to me because I think it's funny, you know, we're all human beings and we have all our small problems and we can't find a solution, right? And when you zoom out, you see like all those people and everybody having the same or maybe different problems, but it looks the same because these problems are just in your mind, right? They're not real in most cases or in many cases. At least these smaller challenges. I mean, I'm not speaking about, you know, when you're, you know, terribly ill or when you lost a loved person or something, but with the minor challenges we're facing in life, I think just zooming out, getting some perspective in is really helpful. So that's another practice I do on a regular basis. Then, that's the mindfulness part, this practice to test your impressions, you know. Our mind is always very quick to judge, and that's the first impression. So maybe the train is running late, right? And our first impression is, oh, this is bad. And when you're aware in the moment, you get to test this impression, which I find very important because our first impression is often not so accurate because who knows whether that's bad or good that the train is running late. I mean, it's what you said before. We don't know really what's good or bad. But our mind is very quick to judge things good or bad. And whenever we're, you know, aware enough in the moment, we get the chance to test this impression. And I try to do this, you know, every day with whenever, I think most of the time it's your ego that's, you know, attacked or feeling attacked somehow. And the ego judges something. And then you must bring awareness in the situation and test the impression. And oftentimes you see, oh man, I got mad for no reason, really. Because you don't know whether it's good or bad. Especially sometimes, you know, one and the same situation is good for you. Or for me, it seems bad, but for someone else, the same situation would be good. And then you realize, okay, I'm judging this too quickly. I mean,
A great example of that is you reference it in the book. Anyone who hasn't, look it up, a Chinese farmer example, which I think Eckhart Tolle talks about too. But yeah, the idea is a horse runs away. Everyone is upset except him. They ask, you know, aren't you upset? He says, oh, this is horrible. Your horse ran away. And he's like, maybe. And then in a situation, the horse comes back with other horses. And then they say, oh, that's great. And he says, maybe. And then long story short, his son gets hurt by the horses. Then he doesn't go to war. And you get a situation where all of these consequences can't be predicted from the initial action, right? And this person is smart enough to know that you shouldn't judge too early. So I think that's a great example of, you don't know why this is good. We have that saying in Serbian, like, who knows why this is a good thing? And yeah, I always try to live my life with that mentality. Like, you never know how this can turn out into a good thing.
Yeah.
We wanted to ask you for specifically voluntary discomfort. That's always interesting to hear what kind of voluntary discomfort other people practice. You know, whether it's cold showers, whether it's fasting. Like, do you implement any of this stuff to, let's say, prepare for the summer by waging kind of practicing in the winter?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, it kind of changed. I used to call these practices voluntary discomfort. And, you know, I do cold showers almost daily. I fast, you know, intermittent fasting almost daily and sometimes 24 hours or longer period of times when I fast. And, you know, it's voluntary discomfort, but there are different whys. Why do I do it? And for me, it it kind of changed. You know, the main why is health or energy. And, you know, there's another way, which is voluntary discomfort, you know, knowing that if it's uncomfortable, it's good for you. But it's voluntary discomfort, but it's most of the time there's more reasons why I do those things, especially the things that I do on a regular basis. It's so much easier to keep up doing with a bigger why than voluntary discomfort. But one thing I haven't done in a while is sleeping on the floor, which I used to do 1 to 3 times a week because of the voluntary discomfort part. And I think it's so funny, you know, I would sleep on the yoga mat, very thin yoga mat next to my perfectly fine bed. And I was, whenever I did this, you know, I was laughing myself into sleep, you know, really, I thought, man, this is so cool. You sleep on the floor next to the bed. And I think that's one thing. I should do this again because this is great. And I mean, yeah, that's one thing I used to do. At the moment, actually, I go for a walk every day and I, you know, hold my breath. So, but again, here's the reason, might be a different one than voluntary discomfort, but this is making it easier as well, you know, the voluntary discomfort part, you know. So I go for a walk and after I exhale, I hold my breath and I count the paces and I do that around 10 times and always, you know, getting a bit further with my breath hold. And I started doing that because I read the book The Oxygen Advantage by Martin McKeon, which I find an important book because, I mean the idea is simple. Breathe through your nose and not through your mouth. And, yeah, he says most of us are over-breathing on a constant basis, and then that takes our threshold down with our CO2 tolerance. And yeah, I mean, we want to have a bigger CO2 tolerance for performance purposes, but he also speaks about weight loss and stuff, just because it's really important we breathe through our nose instead of our mouth. And one exercise you can do is this walk when you hold your breath. So, and that's uncomfortable, right? I mean, it's not fun holding your breath, to be honest. It's like, oh, it's exhausting. But again, health reason is probably more important than voluntary discomfort reason. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know, when I'm trying to practice some of these principles, I oftentimes look to people in contemporary society who I believe are kind of stoic in their nature. I know ourselves, Igor and I just watched this movie about this children's entertainer who lived, he was pretty popular in America, and we said this guy was pretty stoic in the way that he dealt with situations in his everyday life. I'm curious, do you...
You can point out Mr. Rogers. Like, Mr. Rogers, kind of danced around.
I don't know if he would even know who Mr. Rogers is, but... do you have any modern Stoics that you look to? So like people, whether it be who've lived in the 20th century, 21st century, it could be any time that you look to and you're like, well, they, at least from the outside, they look like they kind of practice Stoicism, whether they know they do or not. Do you have any people that, any kind of
modern day
Stoic role models?
I think generally in sports, you would find many people who practice some of the Stoic principles, because I like to listen to interviews, you know, with athletes, and, you know, I think they bounce back very well after, you know, a setback. So I think in sports, you find many athletes, I think, who practice, you know, or have this strong mindset, you know, to, you know, they, because they focus on the process, right? And which is a very Stoic idea, because you focus on what you control and accept what you don't control. And in sports, you often have, you can train hard, but in the game itself, there's so many aspects who play a role that you can't really, you know, choose the outcome, even if you practice really hard. And often in interviews, you can hear it, you know, when they speak about, you know, when they've lost, you kind of hear it, that they focus on what they control and kind of try to accept even failure or losses very well. So in sports, I'm not sure I have a perfect example, but yeah. And Donald Robertson, maybe he's not an athlete, but he's like the most Stoic person I know. I got to know him. I think he's been on your show before, right?
Donald Robertson. Yeah, definitely.
And I've met him in Athens, where I was a speaker at the Stoicon event in Athens last year. And I met him, and we had a dinner together, and he's a really fun guy, very down to earth. And yeah, he would say things like, he's as excited as a Stoic can get, and things like that. He's and he knows so much about Stoicism. So yeah, he practices many of those ideas. And I mean, I'm kind of, you know, a new Stoic who took the trend, you know, with Stoicism. But he was a Stoic long before. I don't know, since he was a child maybe. And so he's got it really deep inside of him, I think. So, and generally, I don't call people Stoic. I think it's, you know, because I don't want to get called Stoic necessarily, because the Stoics themselves, they say, don't call yourself a Stoic. And I think there's a risk of labeling people when we say someone is a Stoic. So, plus for me, it's important, you know, to keep in mind that, at least for me, Stoicism is one very important part of my life, but there's also mindfulness, which isn't necessarily Stoicism. Plus for me, health, because I'm really into biohacking, and I love, you know, doing stuff that gives me some more energy, extra energy. And, you know, so it's, Stoicism is really important for the mind for me, but then there's, you know, again, mindfulness, one other thing, and, you know, biohacking, or those tools or ideas, are another thing. Yeah. And what comes to mind is, I watched Dunkirk maybe a few months ago. It's an interesting movie, Dunkirk, war movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
I have not.
Yeah, I've seen it, yes.
Yeah, and there's this, he's a teenager, Peter, I think his name is Peter, and there's this scene, you know, it's a spoiler alert now, but there's this scene, you know, Peter's friend, who's even younger than him, he died on an accident on their boat. And yeah, what's the scene again? So obviously he's, you know, shocked. And then the guy who was, you know, who caused the accident that his friend died, he would ask whether he's fine. And at that moment, Peter already knew that his friend is dead, but he responded in a, for me, Stoic manner, that he said like, oh yeah, he's fine. And I thought this was brilliant, because, I mean, you can discuss whether it's right or wrong to lie, because it's not the truth, but it was really impressive that this teenager could hold himself, you know, to remain calm and, you know, respond by what, in the way he thought was best. But, you know, you would be very angry when you watch the movie. You're like, ah, he's dead because of you, right? And this teenager, he was just like brilliant. He was like holding, you know, his anger back and remaining cool and giving him the best response he could think of that moment without, you know, acting out of the emotions, but, you know, taking a break and responding with virtue in a way. So, yeah, I think in movies, oftentimes you find people who have this stoic attitude in a way.
We respect it, right? We talk about how you want to behave praiseworthy. And yeah, we respect characters like that. And even some characters who are, you know, in some ways far from stoic. I'm thinking about like characters like Thomas Shelby, for example, from a Netflix show called Peaky Blinders. He has moments like that too, where there's a gun to a head, but he's totally calm, rational during that experience. Yeah. And yeah, I think those are some of the most, you know, hyperbolic examples. But at the same time, it's good because we can think, okay, how would this character act in this situation? And then learn from it. And I want to watch that movie now. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, ask Ryan.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So that movie, I would argue the concept of like memento mori would probably be a constant theme in that movie. I'm curious, how has the concept memento mori changed the way you live, or has it changed the way you live?
I think it has, slightly at least. You know, it's improved my death awareness, I would say. So,
can I ask how old you are now?
I'm 28.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but more, I think it's more with other people or with people I love. I know, you know, they won't live forever. And I try to be aware of that. And I think this makes me more appreciative when in their presence. So when I'm with the people, I try to enjoy it more, just, you know, to be with them and well aware that everybody is going to die. I'm going to die someday and they will pass away too. And so it changed my way that I appreciate, or I'm more grateful when I wake up in the morning, not every day, but I try to. And yeah, I sometimes think about, you know, losing a person I love, and the next time I see it, I can really feel like, oh, it's so nice actually that this person is still here and I can appreciate this person and spend some time with her or with him. And so I would say, yes, I'm more appreciative of my friends and the people I love. Yeah. And I'm more grateful myself to wake up in the morning, generally, if I'm aware enough that day. Sometimes I don't feel well or grateful in the morning, but I try to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask, so, you know, you're 28, obviously young. For our even younger viewers, what kind of advice would you give to your 20-year-old self? If you could travel back in time, what are the kind of main lessons you'd want them to know?
In the last couple of years, what's one thing, or I would tell my 20-year self, you know, that outward success doesn't mean shit. Well, because even the most successful people, they are fighting their own battles, you know. They seem to be very successful, but it doesn't mean anything. They're fighting with themselves at home as well. They're struggling. So everybody's struggling. So even if people seem to be successful outwardly, doesn't mean anything. And it's not something you want to really aim at. You know, it's more important to work on yourself. So be successful with yourself, that you can be alone, that you can, you know, persevere when life is challenging, or as far as I know, challenges. And so, yeah, I would say always know that even the most successful, or the people who seem most successful, they are struggling as well. They are fighting their own battles, but you don't see this. It's maybe it's the media's fault, I don't know, because they show these successful people like, you know, stars, and maybe they are good, you know, actors, or they're good entrepreneurs, but at home, they might not be so successful. So, yeah, invest in yourself, I would say, you know, try to be your best and to develop the skills. You know, people, you can't really see those skills. Tangibles, you know, the tangible skills, maybe you've heard of them. So just, you know, courage, perseverance, grit, they call it. So work on those things rather than outward success, and always know that, yeah, everybody gets depressed or depressive thoughts or negative thoughts, and everybody's struggling with themselves. That's kind of the way it is, and yeah, learn how to deal with those things.
Yeah, I really like that. Thank you.
For sure. We're curious to know what's next for Jonas. Like, do you have, in terms of, do you have any new book ideas? What are you doing in terms of your writing on your website? What's next for you, do you think?
So I've got another book idea, but that won't be my next project. Right now, I'm starting creating an online course, because we've got lots of readers and people are looking for, you know, step by step, you know, or yeah, like a guide, step by step guide, how to put all those things into practice. So they have the book, for example, and yeah, it's 55 practices. That's nuts, right? I mean, you. It's too many practices to actually practice every day. Mm-hmm. So people are looking for, you know, support, you know, or guidance to put those things into practice in their own lives, and, you know, to get maybe, you know, priorities, you know, start with this and then do that. And so I've came up with an idea, you know, to make an online course, main topic Stoic philosophy or Stoicism. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm the perfect teacher, but at least I know a lot about Stoic philosophy. And I think for myself, if I create a course, I can learn a lot, mm-hmm, just by, yeah, doing the course. And I always like to create something. I'm not sure if it's going to work or not, but I think it's really interesting to create something, and then it's going to be there, and maybe I'm going to like it, maybe not, but it's the process that's going to be where I learn lots of things, you know, to, you know, speak in front of the camera and to make these videos and to create the course, you know, step by step. How do you make this? How do you create something like this? And I want to really give it my all and try to, you know, be myself with the course. And I'm looking forward to create this, and we'll see how it goes. So that's going to be my next big project, an online course. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish you luck on that. I know myself being a teacher, the advice I have, and you kind of mentioned it, was, yeah, just think of teaching as a process. Like, how I got into teaching, this is my third year, and my first year, there are things I look back on. I'm like, why did I do that? Why did I make that decision? Because I realize, you know, teaching is this process that you have to mature and learn what the best pedagogical tools are for you. So yeah, I would encourage, even if it's like, doesn't go the way you'd like the first time you put it out there, like, it'll probably go better the second time. And that's what I say to my friends who are new to teaching. They say, oh, I had such a miserable time in the classroom. I said, well, it's the first time you've ever done it. You know, it's a process. It's going to take a while for you to hone your craft. So
exactly. It's better to lose, like, or to fail trying to do something than to lose to failure, right? Then you've lost by default and unvirtuously, which is the worst thing for us, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. I think Mari Forleo asks this question in her book, you know, that you should ask yourself, you know, a couple of years from now, are you going to regret not trying this?
I love
and
that
if you
question.
Think, yeah. So I think I would regret, you know, not trying to create this course, because I just think, yeah, it's such an interesting challenge for me right now. So I want to give it a shot and we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
We look thanks forward for the to seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks a lot, Jonas, for being on the program, taking the time to talk with us. And not only we apologize for the technical issues at the beginning, but we persevered and we got through it. So thank you. And we look forward to continuing to follow the your journey.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on your show. And I wish you all the best with your YouTube channel and podcast. I think it's fun way how you do it, you know, with the earphones. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Keep on doing it. Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. And yeah, this is a passion of ours. I've been, you know, into self-development for like 10 years. So it's great to finally be like doing, producing content about it and talking with other like-minded people. Thank you all for tuning in. And remember to, yeah, put this stuff into action. Don't just read about it. Don't just think about it. It's all about actually implementing it in your lives.